This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
I'm dreaming of a bald Christmas.
Well, you're going to get one of those. We're both going to get one of those, Rog.
Thank God. It's my favourite kind, mate.
It is.
Can't wait for the holidays.
Yeah, we're podcasting right now from the Watch What Happens live studio at Embassy Row,
yep.
Rog. It might actually sound almost a little too professional.
It's a room that's built to bring the treacle.
It's very, very true.
I'm quite excited for the holidays. I feel like I'm holding on like a swimmer reaching for the bar after a long-distance race.
You are still wearing the Everton Christmas sweater.
We just shot our Christmas craptacular.
Yeah, you're wearing your Mitchell & Ness hat.
Chicago Bears 1985.
Yeah, looking
replica.
Very nice. Looking
the golden nice. Years. I'm just back from England.
Yeah.
Fresh back.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to ask me what I did there?
Yeah, I do. I know what you did there, Rog, but for the purpose of this podcast, what did you do there, Rog?
As with Pep Guardiola, making a film that will air on NBCSN January 2nd.
Yeah.
I think 90% sure.
Is he now the godfather to one of your sons?
Or
is that just a rumour?
we're mates.
Yeah.
It was a remarkable experience.
Some people say that Pep Guardiola is now the godfather to one of your sons.
Before he met me, he hated the media.
Yeah.
After meeting me, he hates it even more.
Yeah, really hates
them. He proper hates doing interviews. Oh, my God. Told me that I like to do my talking on the field through his starting 11.
Yeah.
Such an intense bloke to spend time around. Can I tell you one thing about him? Because we'll chat more about him when we do the Manchester City section of this podcast. But one of the most interesting things he told me, at one point in the interview, I just looked at him and he looked at me and I said, Pep, riddle me this, mate, godfather to my children. I said, you're bald and I'm bald.
Was he shocked by that?
Hmm?
Was he shocked by that? There's some people, when I sound like, fellow bald, I say to some people, and they look at me like, I'm not bald.
He's pretty aware. He's pretty aware that there's been a thinning on the Guardiola cranium.
Yeah, the opposite of the thickening.
I said, Pep, you're bald and I'm bald, yet you are beautiful.
He is a beautiful man.
And I'm heinous.
I would.
How does that work? Yeah, I know you would.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you?
Gorgeous man.
And I'm heinous. How does that work? And what he said to me, he didn't actually exactly answer my question.
Uh-huh.
He told me, the stress of football has made me go bald.
Really?
Yeah.
Same for me.
I said, tell me about it.
Togger.
Are
you playing Togger?
Do you think my fantasy first 11 side picks itself, Pep?
you don't know
stress, mate.
It's not easy.
We'll chat more about Pep and about old Manchester City. Most pertinent for this pod, David.
Yeah.
Guess where I went for dinner in Manchester that night?
You went to Wings.
I did. I got my wings.
Ugh.
I did, finally,
mate.
Was it
packed? Because we've been trying for years to get a reservation at Wings.
Yeah. I would give up trying to get a reservation at Wings. I don't think that's part of Wings' business plan.
What, just giving people tables?
It's a fascinating... Wings, if you don't know, if you're a recent listener to the podcast, Wings, we first heard about it through I would imagine he owns a percentage of the restaurant, Louis Van Gaal.
Their global spokesperson.
Yeah, who you love because every press conference, win or lose, he just said,
I'm going to Wings.
I'm going to go... He just picked
Chinese?
Random Chinese food.
Yeah.
And... So we've always wanted to go there. A lot of you GFOPs have tried to get in Wings when you're in Manchester.
They're not in the business of seating people at tables and serving them Chinese food.
Not interested in normal mammals. So I got in there. The proprietor, I know you're probably listening to this.
Mr. Wings.
Mr. Wings is his name, fully enough. And it didn't work out whether he's named after the restaurant, but the restaurant's named after him, or it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man, charming bloke who
maybe
just oversees
he took it
this
over.
Place. Yeah.
And he just said, wow, this is a perfect place for me. Because it's already named after me.
Oh, anyway, he's built this business on very tasty Chinese food in the English tradition of Chinese food.
Well, it could be named after the 1990s sitcom.
I just assumed, you know what, I've always assumed it was. Why wouldn't it be? Mr. Wings would probably love that, but he loves football all the more.
Yeah.
And he's essentially made a tacit promise to all his guests, almost all of whom seem to be football related in the football business, that if you come into Wings, you will not be bothered by run-of-the-mill human beings. So Mr. Wings, and I watched him do it repeatedly as I had a drink before dinner at the bar with Mr. Wings where he told me the story of Wings. He will tell potential customers who stroll into Wings off the street. They come in, they see an empty restaurant, they say, "I'll have a table for two, please." And Mr. Wings very charmingly goes, "Sorry, all booked up tonight." Oh, and they go, "No, it's not. I can see 20 tables that are empty." Then he goes, "Yes, yes."
Reservations.
Booked. Shoves them out the door.
This is how I want to run the Men in Blazers bar. It's a very exclusive place.
It's just hilarious to watch, Dave. It's a fascinating business model, and I need to have him explain to me how it actually makes money. But I love it, because I chatted to Mr. Wings, and he knows just how famous he is in America. He knew I'd come through NBC, which is how I got the booking. But he told me with joy, as we had a scotch at the bar,
yeah.
He told me, I'm not going to do the Mr. Wings accent, but imagine it in Mr. Wings accent. He said, "Do you know a show in America called Boys in Blazers?"
Yeah.
And I felt slightly awkward as he asked me that question. How do I play it? I didn't know how to play it, Dave.
Yeah, well, you can certainly say no to that because you don't know a show called Boys in
Blazers. I didn't know what to do, so I validated. I just laughed.
That plausible deniability when he says Boys in Blazers.
I laughed awkwardly at Mr. Wings and just grinned and said, "Yes, those losers."
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, keep them on
the
side.
The one on the right's pretty good, but the one on the left, oh, what a loser.
And he goes, "They keep asking me to come on their show and be interviewed."
Yeah, we're desperate for him.
Yeah, we've emailed him. Producer J-Dubs has emailed him lots and lots of times. He goes, "I will never go on that show," to which I just kind of nodded awkwardly.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. We're going to make a video about my Wings experience. I took a lot of footage so I can kind of show America the deep. It's like going undercover in the Masons, I felt, like going into Wings.
How was the food? Assuming that they do actually serve food at Wings.
Yeah.
Is there food?
It was
we know they've got whiskey.
It was very nice. Yeah. It was, but run it nice in a way.
Run of the very nice.
Yeah.
Run it very nice. It was run of the very nice.
It was. I'm scared because I know Mr. Wings is listening.
Run
to
of
this.
The very nice.
It was run of the very nice.
It was run of the very nice. That's going on a t-shirt.
It was probably I would say, if Mr. Wings wanted a pull-out quote for the back of his menu from Boys in Blazers,
run of the very nice.
I'd say top 70 Peking ducks I've had of all time. Probably on that list.
How many Peking ducks have you ever had?
A lot, mate.
73.
A lot. By the way, I'm so happy to be back in America.
Yeah.
But I also solved something when I was back in it. You know, being English, don't people always come up to you and ask you the question, what do you miss about England? They always want to know when you're in England, what do you miss about England living in America? And I always answer that with a very polite nothing.
Yeah, the 20 minutes of sunlight in the middle of December. Yeah.
God, it was dark by 2:30.
Sorry, when I say sunlight, what am I meaning sunlight? The 20 minutes of what might pass for daylight on a very, very overcast day in New York City.
I found one thing I miss about England while I was there, David.
What?
I want to share it with you. Nah, I think it's stuff.
Twiglets?
No.
Bovril?
No. Kippers.
Oh, I love kippers.
Kippers.
I ate kippers when I was back in England too.
You did? I didn't just eat them.
Yeah.
I devoured them.
Yeah.
At every opportunity. It was always kipper time.
Yeah.
For all, how would you describe kippers to the American public? Because I don't understand why they're not just like everyone here in this country is just kippering.
Kippers, I imagine these were brought over by the Vikings. It's herring. It's smoked herring.
No.
Yeah, I think haddock or herring. It's either haddock or herring.
I looked in the dictionary and it says a fish of indeterminate provenance. I thought kipper was a fish in its own right.
I think it's haddock or herring.
And it tastes of Laphroaig whiskey, but you're allowed to eat it for breakfast.
Yeah, I like fish for breakfast. I'm a big fan of smoked salmon, a bit of kipper. Kippers, nothing but like kippers.
Why are there not kippers all over America? This riddle me that.
Because they taste awful, but we're raised to eat them, rather like Marmite from a young age, and we enjoy them.
They taste like amazing.
Because it was the only food we got in the 1960s and 70s.
If you want to know what they taste like, if you've not had a kipper, picture like Laphroaig or fish anus.
and combined. Like.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
They are truly.
No, I love kippers.
The last.
We'll be serving those to the three people I allow into the Men in Blazers pub.
Sorry, Mr. Wings. Yeah. We'll get Mr. Wings allowed in.
Jason Kennedy, Blackpile. Josh Cale.
Oh, the greats.
No one else can get in.
We'll get them. You know what? We may get Mr. Wings to work the door. It's an amazing thing.
We'll never have a customer.
It's an amazing thing to watch a man. He's surrounded. By the way, the restaurant, I forgot to say, has thousands of plates, all of which are signed by like Maradona's been there, Mr. Wings, great to be here, number 10 Maradona. So there is like great stuff everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But like his business model is to rush people out and don't want your money, don't need business. It's a fascinating way to live a life. Talking about business, quick plug of business. We loved having Diplo on the show this week. What a lovely bloke he was.
Oh, Diplo's a lovely man.
Godspeed to him and his US football team, the excellently named Phoenix Rising.
Yeah.
How would you say that in your American accent?
Phoenix Rising.
Bringing the treacle.
FC.
Oh, we are back this Monday, upcoming. God, we're like London buses, just never a show for weeks, and then two come at the same time.
Yeah, and unreliable.
But it won't be live because we won't be in the country.
No.
Which means actually it's going to be quite good because we've taped some of it, so I can tell you that candidly. And it's quite good, mostly because we're not in the good parts.
Yeah.
Who's in it, Davey?
John Oliver, Rog.
Yeah, who we only booked. We didn't know he has a show that's called HBO Last Week Tonight.
Yeah.
We actually just thought it was Michael Oliver's older, slightly more awkward brother, referee Michael Oliver.
Yeah.
We're going to break down Liverpool's season element by element with him. And I've got to say, his Jurgen Klopp impersonation is quite excellent.
Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful stuff.
We'll also be back January 4th.
We will be.
Live from another state of mind.
Wow, it's the first time we've shot out. Actually, it's not true. Well, no, it is. First time we've shot out of state, an actual Men in Blazers show.
Out of state. And what state should we go to, David?
Are we going to go to Connecticut?
Possibly one of my least favourite states.
Really?
I just hate the road signs. I don't like the design.
Really?
Yeah, the road signs really annoy me.
No, I quite like Connecticut.
You do?
I like it.
I like the state.
Yeah.
And I love the movie The Ice Storm.
You just don't like the road signs.
Yeah, I don't like the road signs.
Yeah. Okay.
Really, Google them, look at the design. They're just over-designed. Yeah, it's really irritating. But they're going to let us into the Premier League studio. Studio.
Yeah.
Why are they letting us in there?
I have no idea. They might not be.
We're
almost certainly going to be in a closet adjacent to the NBC studio.
Or maybe
studio.
We could broadcast live from the parking lot in your car outside when the motor's still running.
Yeah.
We're going to be with the Robbies, with Rebecca Lodinara, Stormborn of the House Targaryen, first of her name.
Yeah.
I'm only going to do this, people.
Is Rebecca Lowe going to be there? Because it's midweek, Rod.
Oh,
Rebecca Lowe does not like to work the midweeks.
She doesn't. Yeah. It's still her, I like to tell myself, just with a different makeup.
Yeah, Liam McHugh.
Oh, Liam McHugh. I hope he is there.
Yeah.
I think he's a silky pro.
Yeah, he is. Good looking boy.
I'm only doing this thing in Stamford, Connecticut, David.
Yeah.
So once and for all, I can solve the mystery of where that staircase at the back of the studio actually goes to.
Yeah, nobody knows.
At the top of a long staircase
it
is
could
a
be.
Hidden door.
Could be. I wouldn't be surprised if we open it. It's Antonio Conte's office.
You think?
Yeah.
I always thought it was just Ronick, his casting couch.
It could be, Rog. Okay, we have a packed show. We're going to hop in my chopper to get a view of this season
chopper.
From 10,000 feet. We're talking storylines of the season, manager of the season, player of the season thus far. We're going to break down the Seattle Sounders MLS Cup final penalty shootout victory
PK.
On a frozen tundra, an FT in T-Dot. And we reflect on a year that saw US soccer reach the semi-finals of Copa America, and then fire Jurgen 5 months later. Okay, Rog, time to crack open the Guinness.
To the football.
Yes, to the football.
By the way, as I raise this Guinness to you, Davo, I want you to know, Diego Costa, after that great win last weekend, filmed drinking a bottle of beer in the dressing room, still in his kit. And Antonio Conte was asked, why was he drinking a beer? And he told the press, it's part of his method of recovery for the players. It's helpful for the players, he said, and the rest of the squad to rehydrate with a beer as long as it's within an hour of victory. So thank you, Tony Conte.
Yeah.
Guinness is now not just my hobby.
Yeah.
It's part of my health regimen.
It very much is. So we're actually talking about that, of watching Diego Costa with that beer.
Yes.
About how much fun it would be to go for a night out with Diego Costa. There's probably not, there wouldn't be a more fun Premier League player to go out with for an evening. There'd be fast cars.
Yeah. He'd be like coming over to you on the dance floor, giving you his drinks and saying, dance,
dancing!
Dance! And you'd have to, by the time you put his drinks down,
you'd
be on the dance floor and then he'd be on the balcony up there waving with just five or six
and then
women.
He'd jump
and
off.
Men. Yeah,
he'd then
you'd
jump
get up
off
there.
And you'd catch him.
Yeah.
Then he'd go and steal like a tank or
something. Get in my tank!
And he'd come up wearing a whole like uniform of a Coldstream guard.
Yeah, and then he'd say, I'm going to the toilet. And you'd get in there and you'd be like, where's Diego? And then you'd go outside into the street and you'd just see a horse parade. He'd be marching in front of it with the Queen's Busby's all like in line behind him. It'd be amazing.
Doing wheelies around the forecourt of Buckingham Palace.
Yeah,
it'd be
just
amazing.
In a stolen Ford Fiesta.
The greatest night out with Diego Costa.
And then you know how it ends, those kind of nights? It ends with...
It might never end.
It ends in you in prison and Diego is like... Scoring
for fun.
Moving on.
Against Palace.
Moving on.
Probably.
That's how that one beer goes to in the dressing room. It's just a gateway drug.
So much fun. Okay, Rog. At the time of recording, Rog, we are 16/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, to 8/19. That almost sounds like half. And few thought that the screenwriters would follow up last season with a Leicester City sequel, Rog. But even their working title for this year, Mourinho versus Pep, Death Blow, no longer appears all that appropriate. We start, Rog, by talking about all these unexpected storylines for the season.
We do. I mean, before we get into the micro storylines, I do just want to say big picture about our review of the year 2016. In general, an odd year, most certainly from a footballing perspective, as well as in real life, a craptacular year of darkness and widespread mediocrity that actually gave Suboptimal a bad name. We witnessed that miracle against all odds, feel-good Leicester City run you talked about that thrilled the world, made fans of every team apart from the Cleveland Browns feel everything is possible. But it also raised uncomfortable questions about the true talent level in the Premier League that we have worshipped and adored as best league in the world. We watched.
I thought you were going to say why Everton couldn't have won it. That was the most uncomfortable question for you.
Oh, I answered that question a long, long time ago and I'm completely at one with that decision. We sat through a snooze of a Euros, a flat, vaguely competitive Copa Concacafication of our shores, and a US women's national team Olympic failure that made it a disappointing damp squib of a summer. The curtailing of the Jurgen Klinsmann era and the death of Dosasero, which signalled its end deep in that depression. But the Premier League's return, David, it's given us a quality of football that, for once and all, almost matched the narrative. And it's that half season we're going to delve into as we probe our anals and relive some of our finest memories of this half season, which has inured us from reality, which for once is arguably a good thing. Before we delve into this year of best storylines, players, managers, important tweet of consequence, which I think applies to all you dear GFOPs, comes from at Pat Cunningham. When we asked for nominations for the best of the year, he or she just said, "Can I nominate myself for having to listen to your crap all year long?"
Yeah, do you know what? Fair enough.
Cheers, Pat.
Fair play. Absolutely, Rog. This is, you're right, this is a vintage Premier League season and we're not even halfway through it yet, Rog. I'm so excited to see what happens for the rest of it. Okay, where do you want to start, Rog?
Let's go with the storyline of the season, David.
Yeah.
Really trying to laser in. I mean, you would say if anyone really cared, Leicester City, really have so many journeyman players, all had their careers peak at the same time in a perfect footballing storm. They seemingly lose their spidey senses overnight and become classic one-hit wonders, the Who Let the Dogs Out and Macarenas of world football. I say to go from relegation fodder to champions, back to relegation fodder, like watching the classic movie Cocoon played out on psychedelically mowed football fields at the King Power.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think the Russians hacked it.
Yeah.
It's the only logical Russian explanation.
Yeah, it's very, very true. I was looking at the table from this time last year, before we came into Pod, Rog. Leicester were just 2 points ahead going into the holiday season last year. And I think most people still felt like, oh, it's been a dream start. There's no way that it can possibly happen. But Vardy and Mahrez kept on scoring goals. Wes Morgan just bolted it down at the back. Schmeichel was amazing. Their midfield was phenomenal. And N'Golo Kante, we've all now seen how good he is. You know, it's not a surprise to anyone. And it was just a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale.
Twice we had Arlo White on last year, once around this time and then once 2 months later. And both times he came on and his message was, "It's been great. It couldn't get any better." And he then predict their doom, which was imminently meant to come with an Arsenal game or a game against Liverpool. They never wilted. They always kept going until this year when they never really got out the gates.
Yeah.
But everybody else rearmed. That was the storyline of this season. And we were sold one big storyline. And this, to me, is still the storyline of the season, but just not as we imagine. We were sold a Pep Jose title chase, that molten hot fault line that was meant to run through the heart of Manchester. Instead, neither team looks capable of mounting a title challenge. Instead, we've realistically got this intercity Cecil B. DeMille budget battle for fourth place, which is everything, David, because you kind of get the feeling only one of them are going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I think it's so interesting, though, because I think in the second half of the season, I think that both teams are capable of mounting a title challenge, but they're going to have to overcome some desperate flaws that they've got right now. Pep, the whole approach, I mean, you and I have talked about it a lot, is that his almost stubborn refusal to play by the laws or the rules or the customs.
The norms, more than anything.
Of English football, tackling, playing hard, putting a goalkeeper who uses his arms and hands between the sticks.
Why would you?
Yeah, allowing his fullbacks to play out wide and his centre-backs to play in the middle, behind the midfield who get forward and assist the front players. He wants to play the whole game front to back in a very, very different way, and he's going to stick to it, and he's going to either succeed like that or fail like that.
He is going to succeed or fail like that, David, and we honestly don't know, and that's what makes the Pep Guardiola Manchester City story that we should look at first so fascinating in terms of the first half of this season. He is a remarkable human being. I've rarely met anyone inside of football or out who just carries themselves with such intensity. After interviewing him for half an hour, I was so exhausted in a wonderful way just by the act of listening to him. I had to lie down on the floor of the interview room after he left. I was totally shattered.
Were you on your front or on your back?
I started on my front.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up in a puddle of slobber, I was on my back.
Okay, I know that feeling.
I was so spent, Dave. I mean, his ideas, his thinking, his intellectual ferocity. To encounter Pep Guardiola at Manchester City is to meet a remarkably intense gent who's full of details, full of ideas, immersed in an act of transformation. It was like interviewing a caterpillar just as it's changing into an Apollo butterfly or trying to change into one. You get the feeling he's either going to transform Manchester City into Pep's club in a way that Barcelona will always be Cruyff's club no matter what happens, or Bayern Munich has to be still Beckenbauer's club no matter who's the manager. He sees Manchester City as a blank canvas and he wants to make it a true Pep Guardiola club. He's either going to do it or it's going to change him, and it may even break him, Davo. And that's kind of where we are right now in the Manchester City story. He does talk about the ideas that are antithetical to English football, and this is what I think we're both fascinated by. Pep coming in, trying to create change, trying to create a wonderful club. And it seems like there's nothing more that huge chunks of the English media would love, Davo, than for him to fail. Why is that?
You know, it's sort of the same reason that we always enjoy that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, when Harrison Ford goes to battle with that...
The Bedouin swordsman.
Exactly. And he sort of starts whipping out his swords and doing the thing, and he just picks up his gun and shoots him. Is that we like that sort of very hard, root, straight approach to football. We like it to be simple enough that we can understand it. And clearly what Pep is trying to do, there are others, by the way, who love the very sophisticated form, and it's going to be a bit more complex to go and do. But ultimately, I think we don't believe in Britain that ideas win football games and win titles. We believe that players and attitude tend to win over...
So passion. Passion.
Passion tends to win.
Yeah, which is why right now he is obsessed with talking about England's fascination with long balls. He kept talking about why second ball knockdowns obsession and thunderous tackles. He was obsessed with this even before the shot loss at the weekend to Leicester City. It's everything he's battling against in his mind. And that watching Manchester City, it's less can they win games. It's more can his ideas take root? Can he validate them in the minds of the players? I mean, it's so much of the English media would love to him to fail. Fraudiola and spit him back out whence he came. Temerity coming in here with your ideas. I mean, it's the most English trait that we often laugh at, that was best articulated by Steve Coogan, that we love. That if you give an Englishman, Steve Coogan's words, the simple choice between his own success or your failure, what's he going to choose, Davey?
Oh, he's going to choose another man's failure.
Every single time. It's why the 4-2 humbling at Leicester City, which we called on the show the most surprising result since election night, it was so rapturously received in large quarters. At Hyperreal Kevin loved during that game, by the way, how Arlo White, banned from saying unbelievable by his producers, just called the game scarcely believable at several points out.
Smart.
So how do you handicap it, though, David? Because what he's trying to do, essentially, is take these players who are elite footballers in their own mind, the Kun Agueros, and teach them how to walk again. You thought you were good at scoring goals. Mate, you're the first defender. Yeah. Work harder. Otamendi, you thought you were a wall at the back. Nah. You've got to get on the flank and start bombing up and down for me. John Stones, you are my nerve centre. You're a synapsing nerve centre, but I believe in you. You're an incredible ball player. These ideas have got to take root. And that's an incredible battle. Which do you see more likely, him succeeding or him failing in the second half of the season?
I think that he just has to change or adapt a little bit. He's not of an old guy, Rog. He's in his early 40s, Pep? You know, and I actually think what's interesting about looking at a lot of these managers right now. Look at Pep. Look at Jose. Look at what Claudio did in his 60s. The Tinker Man comes into Leicester, plays the same lineup every single week, comes up with a system. Is that these guys surely have to accept that they're all they've done very well in the Champions League, Rog. I think they're going to win it.
They're going to win it.
But it's been a. There's no sense. You don't see successful people in business or any other form of life who don't adapt as they go through. It's always suspicious to me when you see someone who says, at 40, I know exactly how it's going to be, and that's the only way it's going to go and be from now on. English football should teach him some something. There's no shame in adapting based on what you go and see.
To be fair, he does talk like that. He says, I'm always learning, I'm always adapting. He says, I am not Taliban, is his quote when you talk about that. But what's shocking for me from a team perspective, if I was a City fan, $200 million were spent in the summer on transfers like Sané, Nolito, the now injured Gundogan, on all of whom the jury's still out. I think, to me, it's possibly the worst slate of incoming transfers since Tottenham splurged all the Gareth Bale money on the likes of Soldado and Paulinho. I mean, even Simone Zaza is not impressed with Manchester City's incoming class. They still lack a left-back, still feel the self-inflicted wound on the field, and optics-wise, it is Claudio Bravo.
Yeah.
John Stones is like Teddy, the glitching, malfunctioning Westworld host. He was meant to transform it as a player at Manchester City. Instead, he's transformed Manchester City and everything around him into an incredibly expensive version of Roberto Martinez's Everton. It's going to be fascinating to watch how Pep handles something he's never done before, the crazy Christmas programme of games. Game.
Exactly.
They don't do that.
As he
learns.
They don't do that.
It's a time for pragmatism, really.
And as he learns about the English game, in one of the things we spoke about it when he played against Leicester, one of the reasons that Leicester have struggled this season is teams are playing Leicester differently. They're sitting back on them. They're not letting them play the balls over the top to Jamie Vardy for him to run onto. He played against Leicester the way that teams learnt last season that you can't play against Leicester. He refused to go and change his playing style. He's going to have to adapt for the individual teams he's playing, for the Christmas break, for what happens when we're in those dark days of January and February, Rog.
Right now, pragmatism for Pep. He's just got to get through this period intact. And for that, this is the most fascinating piece of story writing by the Premier League scriptwriters. Yeah. For that, he's going to have to rely on the footballing equivalent of a $1 million bill that he found stuffed down the back of the couch.
Yeah.
Yaya Toure.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Manchester City's Mkhitaryan.
Yeah.
Player once discarded. Out in Siberia for so long. I mean, he was almost a has-been.
Yeah.
But with Fernandinho suspended, Gundogan knackered, he's the man again.
Yeah,
he's going to have to be the man again at the Etihad once more. I swear in that win against Watford, I even saw Yaya try and put in a tackle.
You did?
He cares.
Oh, my word.
He cares.
That's amazing
again.
Stuff.
The love
That's
is mutual.
That's amazing stuff. Look, they do have so many good players. It's why I still think that they can contend for the title. Kevin, certainly in the first third of the season, you know, we're going to talk about MVP later, and I don't think Kevin's going to come into either of our thoughts.
No gingers.
If you'd have asked in the first, you know, 7-8 games of the season, I think Kevin would have been right there in the conversation. He's just drifted away over the last few weeks.
A symbol of Manchester City's decline.
Yeah.
Let's look at Mourinho, Davo, because what a curious Mourinho he's been so far. He's almost Benjamin Button, the Mourinho trajectory that we're used to in his 3 years and out arc. United era Mourinho, it began with a frazzled Mourinho that we're used to seeing as the darkness descends. Scorched earth looking Mourinho, haggard homeless looking Mourinho.
Yeah.
Mourinho with a kind of face Donald Trump pulls while watching Saturday Night Live Mourinho. He's a man who prides himself at his peak that he's not only in total control, but he controls the way that you see that he's in total control.
Yeah.
We have not seen that Jose Mourinho at Manchester United. You are one of the world's leading Mourinhoologists.
Well, first of all, I think you look at what he's wearing. He's not established his favourite coat for the season. He's trying so many different coats, Rog. That is a sign of a man in existential crisis.
Tactically confused on the field.
Yeah, exactly.
My anorak's always changing off
it. Doesn't know what to wear. Too many coats. He almost has too many coats. But I still think that Man United are a threat, not only for the top four. I think they could contend. Yes, they're 13 points behind, but I still think that they can get up there. So many good players. They're finding a way to win ugly all of a sudden.
The Mourinho way.
Yeah, finding a way to go and do it. And they have talent on that field, Rod. They have talent.
Talent in pieces, not collectively.
Yeah, everywhere. David De Gea, an incredibly talented goalkeeper. They've got a bunch of talented defenders. They've got some good midfield players. They have Zlatan starting to score goals. Pogba even had an assist, Rog. It's been amazing stuff.
Goal and an assist. Yeah. First time in his... Fast becoming my favourite Manchester United player, Rojo.
Yeah,
I adore that man. Adore watching him play. I got a feeling one of these games in the first half, the camera will cut on him. It'll just be a pair of cleats with just smoke coming out of them. He'll just have internally combusted. He is so passionate, so furious, and so crap. I adore every minute of him on the field. But to me, Mourinho this season, Davo, seemed like the NFL in human form. Huh. A force that was once so powerful, despite so many seething rivalries, so many noses put out of joint. The moment he showed weakness and vulnerability, there was just a mass moral and media reckoning. Yeah. And I think that's partially what he's been going through. I mean,
and he plays the victim so quickly and so hugely. We are the unluckiest team in the world. And yet they have been a little unlucky. They have given up goals late.
They've also been unbelievably unclinical. When
they've been boring,
themselves.
And he's had to shift that lineup all over the place. He's been like paddling really hard under the water, trying to find some kind of combination that works.
But to me, you talked about Pogba showing a little flair, powering a win in Fergie time, no less, midweek. Zlatan now scored 5 goals in 5 after being scoreless for the 6th game before. There are embers of hope there. I mean, Mourinho has claimed they need 2 more transfer windows before they're really his team. A claim that I find absolutely remarkable, particularly when you look at what Conte's done at Chelsea, which is in stark contrast, which we'll talk about. And I wonder how Manchester United fans have experienced this, because watching this Mourinho-led team, I imagine it's 100% more stressful than they ever imagined it could be. I think the question is still there for them, whether they can find a way out of the dark, scary woods that great uncles David Moyes and Louis van Gaal took them into. But for me, Pogba's so key. At Juventus, he just showed he could take over games with his power, his pace, his potency. A poor Pogba that plays with, say, 50% of his hype and social media buzz. That Pogba, combined with an unfettered Mkhitaryan, that could allow the second half of the United season to be very, very different.
OK, Rog, it was supposed to be the year of the manager. Obviously, we spent a lot of time talking about Pep and Jose, but those two have had to share the stage with quite an ensemble, Rog,
Bob,
including one whose American accent is as good as Damian Lewis's. Unfortunately, at the moment, he isn't quite in contention for one of our managers of the season.
He's on the ballot.
Who are your contenders for manager of the season?
Got a couple of contenders, David. Yeah. I mean, one I'll say as a great outsider who I adore watching and we love having him on the pod, Eddie Howe at Bournemouth. Propelled by Steve Cook, Harry Arter, and Nathan Ake, your beloved.
Yeah.
Pushing towards
Chelsea Loney.
Or more aptly, probably dreading the prospect of a Europa League place.
Yeah.
Fantastic achievement.
Yeah.
Another remarkable achievement. Saying this with a straight face, you can vouch for this, David.
Tony Pulis.
Yeah. I mean, a man...
7th place, Rog.
Let's clap, 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 Tony Pulis. TP. A man famed for never experiencing relegation as a manager in 24 years, yet he's never finished in the top half of the Premier
Amazing.
League. You know what you get when you get me. I talk straight.
A good bottom half of the table, non-relegation finish.
And by the way, I've got a daughter I need to buy property for. I'm a straight talker. It is West Brom, tipped by many for relegation at the start of the season, not only in 7th place as we pod, but scoring, as producer JW would joke, against Tony Pulis' strict orders, 2 or even 3 goals a game. To me, this West Brom first half of the season in context, remarkable achievement. There's 3 serious contenders, though, Davo.
Yeah.
Let's start with them in reverse order. First, Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, Arsene, Rog. An amazing season. Finding a way, you know, certainly chaos coming out of another transfer window in September where nothing really happened until the very, very last minute. Seemed like desperation.
He's got to go.
They opened the season with that home loss against Liverpool. Arsenal fans,
leave now if you have any self-respect.
But then, once again, although I think there's been beautiful football played by several sides in the Premier League this season, you can say that he has found, not Everton so much, he has found new levels to go and inspire his Arsenal team to go and play to. And this combination of Ozil and Sanchez, you know, look, as you know, I'm not the biggest Arsenal fan in the world, but I love watching this team play football. It's beautiful.
Watching those two, it is like watching La La Land. But, I mean, I don't like to take credit for every achievement.
Yeah.
But when I did interview Arsene, I said, mate, be a bit harder this season, would you? Bit tougher up the middle, mate. Kick in some shins, knock on some doors, yeah, you know what I mean?
Coquelin's been doing that.
Yeah, I mean, this season, the reason why I've admired what Arsene has done is A, that he's listened to me, but B, he's transformed that squad into a far more combative, resistant, resilient outfit. I mean, the stinging needle of falling off the record that was Tuesday night's loss to Everton aside, by the way, an Everton who deployed old school anti-Arsenal tactics, go hand to hand with them, house to house, man to man, test their nerve, watch them back down. That was a throwback to Arsenal of recent years, but it has been an outlier in terms of Arsenal's performances this season. They hadn't lost since February 28th on the road. And even more remarkable, they've been tenacious this season. Six times they've gone behind in the game and fought back to get some points out of it, which is a resilience, a fortitude, a belief the Arsenal of old seasons have just never shown. And the key for me has been Alexis, Davo. What a joyous delight to behold.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, on a team that are defined by their midfield and forward play, modern Arsenal, Rog, that's how you define them. And Alexis is the definition of how Arsenal want and to and dream of playing football. He is the manifestation of why fans love Arsenal football.
Yeah, and shifting him to the centre is another reason why Arsene Wenger should get an incredible amount of credit. Arsene Wenger, who takes delight from turning every fast winger into a centrally playing goal machine, apart from you, Theo Walcott. By the way, despite that, Theo Walcott has become a menace from the flank. All he needed, as it turns out, was that extra incentive, Davo. Millions of dollars worth of salary are not enough to get him scoring goals. He needed the promise of an espresso maker from his wife.
Is that a euphemism for something?
No, I think it's really an espresso maker. Yeah. I mean, by the way, when she talked about this espresso...
He can't go down to Argos and get one of those himself.
No, couldn't do it. He needed her to offer it like a carrot.
Yeah.
But when she... I was trying to work out why would that incentive... I thought it was a big deal about it. And I imagine their coffee maker is actually a human being. Who's, you know, he's got one who just wafts him with a feather. Yeah. He's got one, the great, what's a great feeder called, who pops him in the mouth whilst master reclines. That surely has a term for it. Now he's got a man who just brings him his venti half whole milk, one quarter 1%, one quarter non-fat extra hot split quad shots. He just clicks his fingers and they come.
Oh, what Theo will do for an espresso. It's amazing, amazing stuff.
So as we were saying.
Yeah. No, and I think that it says a lot about Arsene 20 years into doing what he's been doing in the Premier League, that he still gets out of bed and he thinks, I want to get more out of Theo Walcott. And he has got more out of Theo Walcott this season.
I'm going to give him an espresso maker.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, he's always on the brink of falling into old Arsenal tropes. And while I say the Everton loss shouldn't detract from the remarkable work that's been done this season, knowing Arsenal fans as we do, because this will happen, it did play off the old Arsenal storylines of being soft-centred, that loss. It resurrects the fatal flaw, evidences their own forthcoming doom.
Set pieces.
Who do they have?
Complaints about the referee afterwards, all the stuff.
Central defenders.
Yeah.
Who do they have coming up, Davo? Not just Manchester bloody City.
Yeah.
But the suddenly pugnacious West Brom led by TP.
I know.
And these two games, they're going to be key for the season. They can either have the run of deflating deja vu results Wenger calls a super crisis. And he told me that's a manager's number one job to prevent it. Or they can go on delight and not just win games, but rewrite their own destiny in January, February, March, where they typically fall away. The big threats are real. Injuries, real injuries. Santi Cazorla out, the excellent Mustafi, to me, just as key.
Yeah.
And then the threat of injuries that haven't happened, but we're terrified of them. What if Alexis goes down?
Yep.
And talking of Alexis, the ongoing grinding transfer speculation surrounding the contract renegotiations of Alexis and Ozil, both symbols of how confident Arsenal really are about the direction they're going and their true ambition to stay on as an elite level club.
Okay, let's move on to another manager, potential manager of the season, Rog.
The Meister, to me, one of the most fascinating moments of the season, the Sunderland game. Sunderland keeping 10 men behind the ball. Liverpool not able to manipulate space and dazzle their fan base. The game clicks into the 66th minute. It's goalless. And Klopp, on the sideline, just did an extraordinary thing. What I think was the German signal for raise the roof. And Anfield just went crazy. The Reds scored twice within minutes, took the 3 points. And I adore watching him, not just for the tactical kind of Rubik's Cube front six that just clicks and turns and ties opponents into knots, almost like Sherilyn Fenn with a tongue tying that cherry stem in Twin Peaks, but also the way that he fuses the collectivity of his side with the fan ebullience, with himself in the middleman, just orchestrating both parties.
Yeah, really, really good point. And you sort of feel, watching Liverpool play at times this season, that they are playing the football that is at the heart of Jurgen Klopp's concept and dream of what football should look like. When last season, you didn't really often see them playing in that way. You just felt like, oh, there's still a few players, they're a transfer window, they're an off-season short of what Jurgen Klopp is going to want that team to be. They are playing this season in the way that he wants them to go and play.
In his idea.
Yes, in his idea. We talked about Pep's idea. This is his idea of what football should be, that gegenpressing. However, at the back, he seems to have a bit of a blind spot.
Yeah, I mean, up front, he's got that Coutinho, Firmino, that resuscitated Adam Lallana.
Yeah.
Just Mane, showing the world.
Amazing.
Oh, he's a world-class manager. That back line, Dejan Lovren, Croatian for John Stones, the goalkeeping Marson. This is the season
Loris
so
Karius,
far
Rog.
Of just goalkeeping howlers, each one named in their own native tongue after Stecklenburg. I mean, it's just clown after clown after clown. Somehow, Brad Guzan can't get a game in a first-team lineup. I don't understand that for the life of me. Mm. The back line is a glass jaw, I think, for Liverpool fans.
Save for James Milner.
I think goal machine James
I
Milner.
I know, exactly.
Maybe they should play him in goal, Dave.
Yeah,
but
amazing.
The thing I admire about watching Jurgen Klopp, he's got this kind of Will Ferrell frat boy, pull my finger, ebullience about him. I do believe the more I watch him, the more I realise it's just a veneer. And underneath, there's a sophisticated change agent capable of transforming the organisation that surrounds him. And that's the true measure of the man we never really see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pull my finger!
Yeah, related to Klopp in managerial style. You know, separated perhaps at birth, Rog. Sort of an Italian and German parentage that pulled them apart across the Alps.
Like
the
Mr.
Dolomites.
Rossi's your father.
Exactly. Antonio Conte. At Chelsea,
do we agree our winner of manager of the year
so far? If we accept that Tony Pulis has got a little bit to prove over the Christmas period, Antonio Conte,
Tony Conte, first year in the league,
has to be the person. And the combination of both that energy that he's brought back to Stamford Bridge, the fact that he's got Chelsea playing with a whole new identity, a system that we haven't seen in the Premier League for a very, very long time. And thirdly, and I think most impressively, an adjustment that happened after 10 points from the first, I think, 6 games for Chelsea. And then in the last 10 games, 30 points, Rog, because he adjusted. He changed. Remember, it was only a couple of months ago that bookmakers stopped taking bets on Antonio Conte being fired because everybody thought he was out. He has rebounded. He's rebuilt. He's inspired players, you know, Diego Costa, just one of them, the transfer deadline deal for David Luiz, a reborn Nemanja Matic.
A reborn Victor Moses
out of nowhere. You know, Chaloba coming up out of the youth ranks for the first time.
The big picture for me about Tony Conte,
yeah,
he's just a human tinderbox.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore watching him. I mean, he's arrived at Chelsea like another man I admire, Mr. T. Mm. And when Mr. T and the A-team used to go into a remote farmhouse and he was surrounded by enemies hell-bent on killing the A-team, he'd just look around him, find pieces of discarded tractor machinery, and he wouldn't panic. He'd just quickly cobble them together into like an unstoppable armoured personnel carrier within minutes with which to make his getaway. And that's what your man has done over there at Chelsea. Who did he inherit? He inherited the rats. Cesc. Hazard.
Yeah, Diego.
Diego. And he said, rats, put your little ratty mouse on the steering wheel and let's just drive to glory. I mean, the Arsenal game, the humiliation, they were never in that game. It was an insipid performance. Yeah. To that point, I'd picked Chelsea to be league title winners. You laughed. You thought their performances were limp and impotent.
Yeah.
He turned around almost immediately, win.
Almost with his will.
With his will and his winning DNA, become winner of 30, and these amazing statistics, of his opening 16 Premier League games, hardest league in the world, 10 straight games won, 6 points clear. You compare contrast to Mourinho struggling to grapple with United's cursed chalice, with Pep slipping on banana skins over at Manchester City. It's even more an admirable achievement to me what Tony Conte's done. I mean, looking back on the season, could you have imagined it really, David? If we would have stopped you at that Arsenal game, you were looking at really a bag of dross.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, and I think the other achievement that he's had is that he has been outplayed this season, even during this 10-game winning streak. The game I was at against Tottenham, outplayed for much of that game. The game against Man City, outplayed for much of that game. But he just is, his players reflect his own relentlessness and just relentlessly keep on pressing and pushing and pressing and pushing. And you've got guys like Diego Costa, you've got guys like David Luiz at the back, you've got the intensity of N'Golo Kante, another amazing... We've always said that Chelsea do amazing business.
How'd you win the league?
Oh,
you field N'Golo Kante, he's a talisman.
Yeah.
Eden Hazard, I mean, the battery packs in his oversized buttocks were just on zero last season.
Buttocks.
Somehow he's worked out to found that adapter in the bottom of a dusty drawer and he's recharged them.
So right.
I mean, Matic dominant again. And Diego Costa, not since Jamie Lannister, as a character just swung from pure, pure evil to a character you can emotionally relate to within the course of two seasons, Davo.
Yeah.
But it is that back line. David Luiz, Azpilicueta, and the minimised self-harming tendencies of Gary Cahill. We laughed about him. Corky St. Clair in cleats, always good for a laugh.
Chelsea almost need him to put the ball into his own net to inspire them to victory. It's odd captaincy.
By the way, I've got to ask you, how do you understand the Costa turnaround? Because I've rarely seen a more remarkable one in football from a guy that was a snarling ball of anger management, always looking to get an edge through borderline violence and dark arts. This season, I mean, we all laugh, he's been poised on four yellow cards forever. He's a charming man of wonder. He's a sweetheart. He is a lethal. He is a slim down. He is a toned down. He is a powerhouse.
Yeah, you just mentioned the big slim down. I think the two biggest things, fitness and diet, are the two biggest things for him. He is a man who works so hard. He has such energy. You watch Diego Costa, whatever you think about the man, I still think that, you know, despite what you say about sort of a man who's now suddenly so likable, lots of people are listening to this thinking, I still hate him. I hate him so much.
But they've not gone on that night out with him like we have.
That would be amazing. They'd enjoy
that. So funny with the tank.
But even the people who hate him, you watch him play now, and I defy you, watch this guy play live, and you don't sort of think, oh my God, that is being a striker in football. That is like putting in a shift for your team. The amount he runs, the amount he moves.
To me, it's Prozac, or something like it, to be candid. It's a complete mental change in an approach to life on and off the field. And it's a remarkable thing. I'm all for it. It's remarkable to watch. As we pod, Tony Conte.
Yeah.
Tony Conte, TC, is just three wins away from matching the record for the longest win streak in the Premier League. Owned by you, Arsenal fans, 2001-2002. There are games against Crystal Palace, Bournemouth and Stoke ahead. A win against Spurs would break the record. Can they do it?
They can. It's going to be very hard. You know, suddenly they're winning quite a few games 1-0. Their victory in midweek, Rog, was not, it was not dominant. But they've got a lot of ways to win games. They've got a lot of weapons. I still think that there are teams
we have many guns
in the Premier League who can outplay them. And of course, in this league, what makes it so wonderful is anyone can beat you in any given fixture, as Jurgen Klopp learned against Burnley and Bournemouth.
Even you, Swansea.
Yeah.
I will say, Dave, what blew me away with this first half of the season are the Spurs game and the Manchester City game. Huge games, huge pressure. Chelsea went behind in both of them, but never wavered, never truly looked like they believed they were going to lose the game. And it's that tenacity, that winning DNA. Conte used to manage my favourite Italian club, poor Siena. Went to Juventus and did it there. Watching him make so much out of so little, infuse everything he touched with his winning DNA. To me, that's why I chose Chelsea as title winners before the season. I mean, having watched him in years past, knowing what a winner he is. And I will say this, not to curse you, but six of the last seven teams to top the Premier League table on the day of Jesus' birth, Christmas, they've gone on to win the title.
Yeah, Well, we'll see. Plenty of teams haven't done it, Rog. And that's what makes football great, is that you got to win it on the field, not based on statistics. Time to talk players of the season, Rog. A list that includes some old names, some new names, and proof that Toronto FC is not a retirement home, but a re-energising spa where Premier League legends seek quick respite to charge their batteries. Jermaine Defoe, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at player of the season. And your framing was the NBA framing.
Yeah. Well, every year we talk about MVP and people always want LeBron James. They want to talk about the Steph Curry. They want to talk about the biggest players.
God, Shamagod.
Yeah, on the good teams. However, always make an argument that the MVPs are the players who play on lousy teams.
Rod Strickland.
And figure a way to like turn them into decent teams night after night after night after night. So on that basis, there are lots of unheralded players in the league. Jermaine Defoe, where would Sunderland be without his 8 goals this season?
God, when I went to see him last month and I said, lad, shoot more, stop being so generous, take those shots, I discovered before I went he had 4 times as many Premier League goals as his teammates since he arrived at Sunderland in January 2015.
MVP.
Another one, Gylfi.
Yeah, Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah. Plays on a team which should be renamed Gylfi Plus 10. I mean, you watch him play for Swansea. He lives and dies still for every moment. He never gives up. And after last weekend, he had a hand in 46% of Swansea's 2016 goals to his 14 that he netted off his own foot and the 6 assists. He really is the only living boy in New York. Another player that I've adored watching, and I think is probably not the MVP, but is probably the most coveted player in the league of comedic defences right now, Virgil van Dijk.
Oh, my God, wonderful football.
Not the last starfighter, but the last man in the Premier League who actually knows how to defend footballs. But when we get down to the MVP in the kind of LeBron James style of the word, who do we say, David?
Salomon Rondon. Well, no, that was just another contender. I got to put Rondon up there. Where would West Bromwich Albion be without him?
Yeah, TP, it's a one-man team.
I mean, I think it comes down to 2 players. Most people would say Diego Costa or Alexis Sanchez. Yeah, I'll tell you where my thinking goes here. I was saying earlier that Alexis Sanchez is the manifestation for Arsenal fans about the way that they want to see Arsenal play football. So to me, Alexis Sanchez just shades it. Diego Costa is very much just one part of that team that is functioning in every single phase of the pitch. Courtois is making great saves. Their back three are playing superb. Their wing backs, Marcus Alonso and Moses, are playing so well. They're good in the center of midfield. Hazard is reborn. They're just good everywhere. And Diego Costa is the point of the spear. Alexis Sanchez is at the heart of everything good that happens for Arsenal. So I have to make him my player of the season.
You know, you can make a case that Alexis Sanchez deserves player of the season just for that dink third goal against West Ham alone.
True.
And to me, Diego Costa has probably arguably been the single most dominant and impactful Premier League player on the single most dominant team. So that way, in the old school kind of American style of MVP, I would probably shade and go Diego. But I've got to say, when I think about...
He is the most improved player, taking another NBA analogy. Season to season, Diego is the most improved player in the league.
And he does a lot of great work for charity. I would say the player I love to watch in the most selfish terms... I thought about this. Who do I love watching most on football? Producer JW always shocked us by saying he just adores watching Manchester City play football on television.
Yeah, 2015-16 City.
Yeah, Pellegrini City said he used to love watching them.
To me, it was always... He used to set his alarm.
I used to be excited, but it was always a job of work. So this is a very subjective category. And to me, the player I love watching most, if I'm being truly honest, is Philippe Coutinho at Liverpool. Less a football player, more a beat poet. I mean, just his ability to combine with Lallana and the twosome Firmino. They just bruise their opponents' brains. It is next level football, and it is absolutely gorgeous to behold, and I never take it for granted before Barcelona or Real Madrid swoop in and give Liverpool
and see what hurts me,
some memories.
What hurts the Coutinho argument for me is there are so many players on that Liverpool team playing so well. I think Lallana has outscored him this season. That it's just so many good players. Whereas Alexis just seems, other than Ozil, it seems head and shoulders above the
rest. Yeah, but every time Coutinho touches the ball, my nipples tingle.
Okay, it's been an amazing season so far, Rog, but not everyone has lived up to those expectations.
Why would we dwell on the positive?
And we're
we can wallow in the negative.
Yes, yeah, the Steve Coogan section. And we're not just talking about the Men in Blazers show season three, Rog. Our busts of the season. We got a few of them. Let's start in North London.
Yeah, so many fascinating sub-stories. The curious blunting of Tottenham, the muting in form of Dele and Dier, former of whom is locked in some kind of mano-mano private secret competition with Ozil to see who can nutmeg more opponents before May. Nutmeg Fight Club! We should trademark that, David.
Nutmeg Fight Club! That, well, we got the theme tune.
West Ham, team on the rise, team of the future.
I thought they were going to finish in the top four, Rod.
Yeah, and then they elected to move disastrously to the Olympic Stadium, a move which has torn apart the club and its culture like one of those awful deconstructed dishes at the New Cuisine restaurant. This is cheesecake, sir. Everton's new era thus far. Oh, the win against Arsenal was sweet, but it was no more than a comb over on a bald man in a disco.
Papering over the cracks.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the club this season, I tweeted this out last week after their brutal loss. If Springsteen's the river, Johnny Cash is hurt, Fleetwood Mac's landslide were on a football team, Everton would still be sadder than them.
But hope, Rog, after that win against Arsenal.
And some valiance, Dave, and some collective endeavour, and some passion, finally. Pray to God in 2017 there'll be more. Because the thing I love about watching Everton is less the winning, which doesn't come often enough. It's more that 11 men will always give the most that they could to try and take on superior on paper foes. We've seen none of that, or very little of it this season. We've seen almost a team who really could not care, and it made me worry that behind closed doors something is not quite right. But possibly the greatest tweet ever from @dojudo tweeted, "Watching Everton is like watching a 90-minute montage of all the bad choices I've made in my life." Maybe more painful.
That's very, very true, Roger.
What is the true bust of the season, though, David?
Well, I mean, maybe bust is not the right word, and it's way too early, and this is going to seem so harsh, and I think we're going to get a lot of emails. But perhaps it's been the disappointment of the season, Rog. And it's been, come on, Bob Bradley in Swansea.
He's a remarkable human being. His journey through the fringes of the football world was that of a noble stoic. But when he was appointed by American owners as Swansea's manager, English traditionalists scoffed. You know, Danny Gabardon, a Welsh football pundit, Cardiff player turned football pundit, said, "I can't take him seriously because of his American accent." And we in America bridled, derided their parochialism. We knew Bob could coach. We were proud of him for smashing the glass ceiling. Yet right now, the parochialists feel that they're winning, David, and their arguments being validated, which makes the stakes for Bob in the coming weeks so high. He really has to succeed. He was handed a bum hand. He really was. Squad bereft, without Wilfred Bony and Ashley Williams never really being replaced. You look at the Solomon Rondon, your beloved Solomon Rondon, David, and his headed hat-trick. Not once was a central defender anywhere near him.
Yeah. That's been the problem. They've been getting thrashed, Rog. That's really the biggest. That's the biggest issue.
It's been the worst rescue attempt since Scatman Carruthers in The Shining. Hashtag axe in the head. There's no storyline we pray more for a turnaround in 2017. And I will say, my film with Bob Bradley, remarkable human being who's living life experiences that can never be taken away from him, airs on December the 26th on NBCSN.
Yeah.
He's an amazing human being.
Okay, Rog, whatever you think of the scriptwriters casting this season, it's hard to ignore the number of moments that have prompted us to give praise to the football
praise
gods.
Praise be!
What are your moments of the season, Rog? Moments of the season.
For me, there's been so many.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, filming with Arsene Wenger, with Pep Guardiola, with Jurgen Klopp, real learning experiences from remarkable humans, spending time with Christian Pulisic and his family the day after he just torn through the Real Madrid backline in a Champions League game at Dortmund, just 18 years of age, from Hershey, Pennsylvania, was a remarkable thing to be part of. A week in Iceland ahead of their Euro fairy tale made me think deeply about youth development and how it's done properly and how it's not done properly. I think we'd both like to spend more time in the year ahead looking at that youth development issue.
Yeah.
But the pod we take with the unbelievable Heather O'Reilly ahead of her international retirement, for me, was probably a personal highlight and a must listen for any young player with big dreams today. But a couple of moments I keep thinking about, I just interviewed Pochettino and I asked him what keeps him awake at night. And he looked at me and laughed and he said, "Do you mean about football?" And I was like, "Yeah, about football, about Tottenham." He goes, Roger, nothing about football should keep you up. It's not important.
Huh.
Life is important. That's worth worrying about. But football, no. And a brief moment of perspective there, because I actually like forgetting about real life and the real world.
Yeah.
It's exactly why I love the game. It's a miniature world within the real world. Turtles all the way down. Have you got a moment, David?
Yeah, but it's not nearly as impactful as that. But it was impactful on me, especially because of some of the stuff I was dealing with personally with my mom, spending some time in London, being sick. It meant that, you know, Chelsea have actually meant quite a lot to me. Over the years, we've talked about it, is that to some extent, doing this, my fandom of my individual team has soured. And some of the Mourinho era, some of the fact that Mourinho was always the story, some of the football we played, it wasn't always so fun to see, especially after Frankie Lamps, my beloved Frankie Lamps, left the team. Some of my love of seeing Chelsea sort of went, but being back in London, being around my mum, going off to go and watch them play. Very often when you go and see live Premier League games, where you sit, you have particular views of certain moments. Like I remember in the 1994 World Cup, I was at the Rose Bowl and I sat right opposite in the stands the moment when Escobar put the ball into his own net and was collapsed on the ground after scoring that own goal. And it's a frozen moment in time for me. I was just sitting in exactly the right seat to go and see that happen. And a much less impactful moment, but would be my moment of the season, is I was directly in line with Pedro and where the ball ended in the back of the net in that goal he scored just before halftime against Tottenham. And it's one of those amazing moments where you see the moment the ball leaves his foot, you realise the second it starts curling, you realise that's going in the back of the net. And it was a wonderful moment. And I was actually standing up with my great mate Scoops, like rising to applaud it before anybody else in the stadium, because I had the perfect view
who
of that
you've
goal.
Known through childhood.
Yeah,
and you were Scoops, jumping up and down together as if you were still kids.
Yeah, no, and very much so. It was like the childlike love of football.
And it's at that moment you turn around to Scoops and said, let's start working our 30 for 30, the two Pedros.
Exactly.
Forthcoming.
Yeah, who knows?
On ESPN.
Yeah, the fact that it was Pedro, also a player who we have both like groaned at. There is no player who we have pulled more hair out about than
Pedro's.
It was amazing, amazing stuff.
We don't like to, my dad always says to me, I don't dwell, Roger. I don't think about the present. I always look forward. I always look to the future.
Very un-English man.
Now I say to him, Dad, that's called repression in America. But we're going to look to the future together, David.
Yeah, it's time for our predictions for the year ahead. Unaided by pies, Rog, although we have eaten so much pie over the course of the last 3 years.
So these
years.
Are fake predictions. If they're not pie-powered, they must be fake predictions.
No, what I'm saying is we have so much pie within us. We are basically both made of pie.
Like Steve
at this
Bruce,
point.
We're both 73% made of pie products.
So we should be able to do it.
So what do you want from me? A prediction for the second half of the season?
Yes, absolutely.
There's two I'm completely sure about, 100% sure about,
okay,
and put money on them. First is, there'll be a new coach at Manchester United before the end of the season, and his name, Bob Bradley.
Okay, maybe you haven't eaten as much pie as I thought. What's the second one?
It's related.
Yeah.
It's a counter-strike. Manchester City, they can't just let a big move like that, seismic move, take place without countering. They see United, Bob Bradley in, and they counter a lightning strike. They sign Michael Bradley.
Okay.
Can't tell you whether he's just a player or he could be player manager. I think he's just a player. Those two I'm 100% sure about. But here's a prediction that I can see breaking one of it two ways, Dave. And it revolves around the reason why we watch football. The matinee heartthrob, who is above the line in every Premier League production. That bottle of Drakkar Noir made human, known as Mr. Mark Clattenburg.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Clatcats. What do you call him? You call him on the show a beautiful new nickname.
The Knob.
The Knob. The Knob. I can see, I always think, first thing when I wake up, I kiss my wife. I say, thank God I'm married to you. I say, thank God I live in New York City. And then I think, what's going to happen to Mark Clattenburg before the end of the season? I give myself two answers, Dave. I can either see that he's going to be a shoo-in to win next season's Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, could happen.
Or, and I'm 50-50, my delegates... 50-50. I can imagine him turning to the dark side, making a naughty softcore porn video, maybe on that Vivid production level, in which he gets oiled up and slowly gives out yellow cards in the nude. Mark Berg, the Bone Ranger.
Could happen.
Which is more likely in your mind? Ballon d'Or or porno?
Probably porno, unfortunately. Unfortunately for everyone. I don't know, what is my prediction for the year ahead, Rog. I don't know. This season, just this Premier League season, let's forget about Leicester winning the title. Let's just think about this Premier League season has already been so unpredictable. There's obviously been a re-establishment of power. The big clubs have come back in. We've had a beautiful re-establishment of football. I really hope it's going to be some joyous football. I don't think we've really seen that outstanding, no doubt, everybody agrees on it, contender for goal of the season. And we've seen some amazing goals. I just have a feeling we are going to see a goal, a golazzo of such epic proportions, a sort of David Beckham from his own half kind of a goal.
Honestly,
I think we're going to see a goal.
Is that your way?
I think we're going to see a goal in the
that
back half of this season.
Of telling me Gary Cahill's got more in his locker.
No, no, not an own goal. Not an own goal. I said a goal. Although, an own goal of the century would be amazing.
Un golazzo.
An own golazzo would be amazing. I think we're going to see a goal that will just literally blow everyone away.
Let's now talk about a game in which there were no goals.
Yeah. Oh, time to turn to MLS. Seattle Sounders, Rog, claimed their first MLS Cup Saturday night in Toronto, defeating Michael Bradley's Mob in a penalty shootout, sipping from Don Garber's golden chalice.
His goblet.
The coda
Garber's
Seattle,
goblet.
In his throne. The coda to a Seattle
Why
season.
Why is he a goblet made of plastic? Shut up, it's gold!
To an avant-garde eccentric jazz performance. Discuss, Rogelio.
Well, if you, dear listener, put your ear against your window, I'm sure that roar you can faintly hear in the distance is still emanating from Seattle, mighty Seattle, who have taken what is theirs. I will say about Toronto and Seattle, both teams have remarkable fan cultures, both represent MLS in a wonderful style, but the football was no great showcase. It's the first MLS Cup to end without a goal, the four to go to penalty kicks, including one of the saddest shots ever to come off the foot of Manchester City rumoured transfer target Michael Bradley. It was really not a classic. It was a grinding game, fought out in a polar climate, a game of poor passes and rock-hard nipples. For MLS, good news, they had a Sports Centre-worthy moment, a heroic leaping parry by goalkeeper Stefan Fry, the best Seattle save since Norm Charlton. And the ratings, Dave, USA and Canada combined 3.5 million, 1.4 million on Fox alone, which I think I've computed, I've done the numbers, 400,000 Seattle fans and a million people who, like me, own Alexi Lalas's debut album, Ginger.
Yeah, that seems statistically accurate, Rog. Amazing season for Seattle, Rog. Bounce back season, a lot happened.
Defiant, tenacious campaign ends in glory for them. And to me, I mean, you look at the players that left or were not available. They were Femi Martins, Clint Dempsey, the manager change, just written off and then bouncing back within the last 14 games of the season. They're a lesson that collective belief can overcome all challenges, as can no shots on goal in regulation. Mazel tov to our mate Jordan Morris, won the NCAA championship last season, MLS Cup this season. And he's going to lift the World Cup in 2018 for sure. What a born winner. At MGE tweeted us, Leicester City, the Chicago Cubs, the Seattle Sounders, 2016 has been the year of Arlo White.
Arlo White.
Hashtag charcuterie.
Okay, Rog, back to the Premier League. Your weekend looks like this. Saturday, it's Palace versus Chelsea at 7:30 a.m. Eastern time. My nephews are going to that game. They're going into Steve Parish's box, Rog. I've told them they have to be on their best behaviour. Sunday, City host
They've
Arsenal.
They've just got to give hand signals to Pardew when he looks up and embarrasses poor Steve.
City host Arsenal, 11:30 a.m.
Tell you who also will be that.
Who?
Producer
J-Dubs is going there. I know.
He's not just going there. Yeah. He's then going on tour. If any GFOPs are going to be at the Derby, he's headed down there. Yeah. He's going to be at Goodison Park.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope it still smells.
If any GFOPs are on the Heathrow Express from Heathrow Terminal 2, Paddington, on Saturday morning, you might see producer.
He's also going to Manchester. He's also going to Manchester City.
He's going on World Tour. I've got to link you up with my nephews.
He's also going to go to City Arsenal.
Okay.
Look after him, England.
Yeah, I just said City host Arsenal 11:30 a.m. on Sunday. Monday, the big one, Rog. I know what you're doing Monday. Everton versus Liverpool at 3 p.m. That's followed by the Men in Blazers show mid-season review holiday special with GFOP and massive Liverpool supporter John Oliver. All of that is on NBCSN. Okay, Rog, There are many ways to connect to us. One is through the Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Fridays, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Many places get a tiny percentage. Allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. Rog, you've put a lot of books in the Emporium this year. One or two or 52. Give us your top three.
Oh, I'll give you my top three, which is really four because it is four.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing year of reading, and I've loved reading along with so many of you GFOPs, and thanks for your thousands of suggestions. The best four books I've read this year. Very cheery, and I do hope to read more cheery books in the coming year. When I looked at these, I was mortified at myself. Hitler Ascent, 1889 to 1939 by Volker Ulrich. Just a remarkable biography, fantastically crafted look at a very poignant question. A poignant question for the present to some degree. How did a man who was largely dismissed as, quote, a half-insane rascal and a pathetic dunderhead, both quotes, rise to power in a democratic nation, legitimise doctrines of hatred? The book tells a story of how that can happen when someone is underestimated and the system thinks it can control him. Second book, slightly different to Hitler the Ascent, Pep Guardiola, The Evolution by Martin Perenau. Behind the scenes access to Guardiola's Bayern experience with lessons on leadership. They're as much to do with life as they are about football. Secondhand Time, an amazing book. The Last of the Soviets by Svetlana Alexievich, Nobel Prize winner. She's like the Soviet Studs Terkel. Reading it will make you hear the Russians love their children too in even deeper human ways and even sting understood. And finally, a book that I found thanks to producer JW, All That Man Is by David Soloy. Fantastic crafted volume that explores the current state of masculinity and generally the lack of it. I could relate to almost every page. And like any great book, I've not stopped thinking about it since I closed its covers one last time.
Well, Rog, I've put a lot of non-book related items into the Emporium this
year. And our barbecues are a lot cleaner for all of them.
Yeah, I have to say, my favourite ones, the Grillaholics grill mats. Those, you can look those up.
They're life-changing.
The thing I got the most feedback about was the Breville Crystal Clear Electric Kettle. I've got people really converted to the Crystal Clear kettles, Rog. Definitely done that. And books. Oh, it was the one that Words That Make You Sound Smart. That was a the brilliant thing. I've been reading that. Except I haven't. Can't remember any of the words. Unfortunately, I need a book on memory so I can remember some of the words that make you seem smart. Okay, and it's the time of year, Rog, when we're reminded how fortunate we are. A quick mention for a young football fan you may have seen online or on television recently. He was the mascot at yesterday's Sunderland versus Chelsea game. Bradley Lowry is a five-year-old from Hartlepool, England, with terminal cancer. There's a holiday campaign, Rog, for Bradley that has people sending him cards from all over the world.
Please do
this. This is amazing. Bradley Lowry has received more than 11,000 cards.
From all over the world.
We'd love him to receive even more. GFOPs, if you're so inclined, you can send Bradley a card to this address, 5 Attlee Avenue, that's A-T-T-L-E-E, Attlee Avenue, Blackhall Rocks, B-L-A-C-K-H-A-L-L, Blackhall Rocks, comma, Hartlepool, H-A-R-T-L-E-P-O-O-L, and the postcode T-S-27, new word, 4-B-Y.
Oh, do it, do it, do it. That story reminds us of everything that is important. All that remains at the end of this, Dave, the end of our 2016 pods for us to give our thanks.
Yep.
To my assistant, the greatest researcher in the world, Bradley Feldman, man who knows more about Sunderland than David Moyes does. Thanks to the Men in Blazers team, producer Jen Simons.
Yeah.
Human wonder.
Yeah.
The great Evan Matthews. And to, above all, two people who give their heart and soul to all we do. We are a tiny team here at Men in Blazers. Producer Lexi, producer JW, simply remarkable partners whose fingerprints, thoughts, wisdom and love make creating Men in Blazers a constant delight.
Yeah, we're indebted to them. And humour. Oh,
indebted to them more than we can say. And to you, Dave.
Yep.
My partner in friendship and pod.
Yep.
I love you and treasure every second in your company.
I love you, Rog.
I look forward to Chelsea's forthcoming title victory, making you totally insufferable.
See, you ruined it there.
And I dedicate this year of work to the memory of your beautiful mother, Brenda.
Oh, thank you so much, Rog. Love, thank you to all the Men in Blazers family. Thank you to our GFOPs.
Most importantly.
This year, your messages around my mother's passing and just your messages, your communication all year round, it's just been wonderful. We do this because of you. We're inspired because of you. And we'll continue to build this bigger and larger and wider and lots of exciting things going to happen next year, working on some really great new additions to the Men in Blazers universe.
Finally, getting out of New York and not just Connecticut. We may
see another state,
a town near you. So to you listeners, the final Guinness of the year, we raise it to you, great friends of the pod. Thanks for your year of ideas, feedback, drawings, photos, general all-round magic. We never take your passion for granted. Your positivity, your optimism, they are a godsend in these wild times. So we raise our glass to more, to health, to happiness, to life, to the year ahead.
Vendapunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Exposure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To Tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
To everyone, health, happiness over the holidays, to life, and to Bob Bradley. 6 points, maybe? 6?